Hi, everyone. I'm going to speak in English. I don't know if anyone needs it to me to speak in English, but I just prepared it in English, so let's just do it. Let's roll with it. I don't know why it just keeps moving forward alone. Swear to God, I didn't do this. So, first of all, so sorry for the time it took. It was supposed to be 11:30. It's not. For me, it would have been. I don't know. It's just, it has a mind on its own. My name is Cristiana Serra. I'm from BioDroid. And apparently all these people are not are not sick of hearing me already because they came here. It's like an internal BioDroid team meeting. And I'm a producer, so yeah, we are in a marketing track. I have no idea why. So if you're expecting to hear something about marketing, I'm really sorry in advance because it's really not my area. I'm going to talk a little bit of risk assessment in video game development. I hope you guys like it. I hope it's not too boring. If it is, please just tell me. I tend to speak a little bit fast when I'm nervous. So if only dogs can start hearing me, please tell me and I'll slow down. I'll try. Let's start. Yeah, and I had the time of my life with the animations on PowerPoint, by the way. It was 5 a.m. and I just went with it. So when I started in BioDroid, I started as QA. And I hear this saying a lot, that the best producers come from QA. And I tend to believe in that, obviously. And I started working on some cool projects. NV Runners, Billabong Surf Trip, and Mega Ramp Skate and BMX. I don't know if you guys ever heard of it. Probably. But it was in this time when I started that I understood that this was a business ripe with uncertainty. What does this mean? We never know where the problem comes from, actually. Sometimes we only are aware of the issues when the game is out and the audience points it out to us. Then I got promoted, yay me, to associate producer, where I worked in this awesome project called Activision Decathlon. It's amazing. It was really big and really hard to do with Activision, which is not easy, but it was amazing and we learned a lot. And on Mosh Surf Series, that you guys probably heard about that too. And when I got in this position of associate producer, I understood that sometimes we are so inside the game that we become blind to its details. Because it's our baby after all, and we never want someone to look at it and say, oh, there's something wrong with it. Then I got into producer for mobile earlier this year. And I work in really fast-paced, really fast-paced games, little games that were 2 months in doing. And I learned a lot. And what I learned the most was that developing a game is a very risky business. The likelihood of failure is far greater than success. I'm sure you guys are aware of it. So I started thinking more about this risk assessment issue when earlier this year we started thinking about a new product, a new game for consoles and not for mobile. And this changed a lot of the way I saw pre-production, for example, because I went from little projects, because they are little compared to this one, they're about 8 months tops, to actually having to think about a project that's going to be extended for 14 months or more. So I was like, what am I doing here? Because I was not understanding the process of translating myself from mobile to console. It's hard, and you have to keep yourself centered. So I started thinking, what does a producer actually do? What am I doing in BioDroid in this huge game? And I learned that, yeah, much of what I do is managing risk. And this is a really cool guy, Daniel Cook. He's really awesome. If you guys want to Google him, he's really awesome. He gives nice ideas. So as a producer, I manage a lot of things. I manage people, technology, tools, business, a vision. I manage fast-changing markets. And it's really hard to juggle everything and keeping on track on your team because it's the most important part is making sure that your team is motivated to go through it. But after all, even with all these big things that are scary, the game is still my baby and the game is still our baby as a company. And we try to postpone, as the proud parents, we try to postpone every procedure that might show us that there is something wrong with our baby. We don't want to see it, we don't want to look at it, because if we look at it, we really have to look at it and not just turn the other way. So, but this, I found that something that we actually really do. We look the other way. Instead of facing the risks as they are and as they come, we make do. We make do with unstable engines, poorly trained personnel, undisciplined teams, because they are your teams. So you want to make them work. But sometimes you just have to change everything and make them feel that this is a business and not just fun. We have to deal with lack of motivation, incoherent creative vision, never know where a game is coming from, real costs and overdoing those costs, and lack of marketing. This is something that I learned actually pretty recently, because we, most of us that work in this industry and are outside of this industry, we have no idea how important marketing is, not just for the post-game, for the before game as well, but we'll look into it. So we actually, we all are aware of this, but we choose to ignore this huge tsunami warning and just build castles in the sand because it's pretty fun. And I really like building games and making projects, and I love my team, but sometimes we have to look deeper into it. So what we have to do is risk assessment, which is not so fun as building a game, but it's necessary. But when I say risk assessment, it's for real, not just, oh my God, this might go wrong. You have to sit into it, you have to look at your project and say, these are the things that can go wrong. They might never go wrong, but if they do, you're prepared. So this comes with a really, really nice thing that producers have to do. Nice and awful. We have to make decisions. We have a huge team, we have a lot of minds thinking at the same time, and we have to make decisions. Because an idea pops along, and when I say it's an idea, it doesn't even have to be concerned with the game design itself. It's an idea, it's a production idea, it's an art idea, it's a tool that we might use. And we have to really think, let's do it or nope, no way. You can just turn around and go back to your seat. But while we are producing a game and developing a game, game designers come to you and say, oh, can I just please have a little more time to just reset all these balance things? And we have to think, oh my God, should I let him do it? And then the artists come along, please, please, please give me 2, 3, 4 more weeks to keep polishing textures and animations. And we think, maybe this makes sense if they really need it. But then comes the programmers, and they swear on their mothers that if we give them 2 more weeks, they will remake the whole gameplay system, and it's going to be amazing. And even marketing pops along sometimes, say, oh, you know what? E3 is coming. Can you please fit in our production time, a little demo for us? And we think, okay, we have to make a decision, because I can't say yes to all these things. If I say yes to all these things, our project, it was 14 months, it's going to be 28 months. And this is the most important thing, is actually assess the risks that we might take. And it's not awful for us to take them, and it's good for the project. So, what is risk? Risk is looking into one of these ideas and feel the probability of disaster or success. And sometimes the disaster is bigger than success, but you're still going to try it. Because if you ever feel that your game is not risking in any part at all, you're making a bad game. You have to risk in some part. If you don't, it's just an original. No one wants to play a game that was done a million times before. Well, don't say that to Candy Crush Saga and the millions of clones, but those are cases in a huge universe. So, but do or do not give the time, or do not give the time. You have to think about that there is a balance in all these choices. Sometimes you just have to bet it. So that was a risk. What is a risk, actually? Sometimes people are not, we know the word, but we don't really know what it means, like deep what it means. So I love this quote from Pooja Kangwani. It's a guy that I read. He talks a lot about project management. He's really cool. And he says that the risk is the intentional interaction with uncertainty. And I love that he says the intentional, because for us to assess a risk, we have to intentionally look for it, because otherwise it will be there and it will lie there, but we'll never find it. And this is the standard definition, is the uncertainty on objectives. And you see that I've underlined objectives, because what is our game, in the producer side of view, if not a huge role, a successive of objectives that we must achieve? And uncertainty plays a big role in each of them, and we have to assess that. So this is a law that I live by in BioDroid, and everybody keeps saying this. It's Murphy's Law. Everybody knows this, that anything that can possibly go wrong goes. And if sometimes it feels not going wrong, it's going to go wrong either way. So what you have to do is just plan for the worst and hope for the best. But your job as a game production, I don't know if you have someone here in production side, but your job as a game producer is just think about everything that's wrong with our baby. And that hurts a lot because it is our baby, it's our child. So this cool guy called Sean Dugan says there are two types of risks. We have rational risks and we have scary risks. Sean Dugan, okay. What are rational risks? Rational risks are the ones that we actually can look into them and see the probability of disaster and success. And you say, okay, I probably can live through this. It's okay. There is genuine danger. Don't overlook that. But you can rationally consider the risk versus the reward and say, okay, this is something that's going to be good for me. Like skydiving, probably you're going to live. Like car racing, if you don't just blow yourself against the wall, you're going to live as well. And getting married, that's a really big risk. I'm so sorry, Flippa, don't take this personally. She's going to get married next. Sorry. Getting married, it's a rational risk. You're making it. You're thinking correctly. And then you have the scary risks. We can barely even begin to calculate the dangers involved. And if you can, the odds don't look good at all. Like picking a fight with Chuck Norris. That's not going to end up well for you. Or having unprotected sex in Lloret del Mar. Don't do that. That's asking for trouble. And of course, game development. Side by side with unprotected sex in Lloret del Mar. Okay, sorry. So we are in the scary risks department because we don't even, we can know some of the risks that we're going to go because we went through it before, but most of them we have no idea that they're going to come along. So how many times have you heard this before? I had this super amazing, fantastic, radical, innovative idea. Oh my God, Christiana, you have no idea. You have to let me do this game. It's going to be amazing. And everyone, not everyone in the world has ever thought about this gameplay idea. And this is my face. Really? Really? Don't say that to me. But let's just sit ourselves back a little bit and think. Why? And this makes sense. Why they're telling me, it makes sense. Why do we follow a proven but tried approach when you can propose something never done before? This makes sense, right? It's something that's original. No one has ever done it. You're going to be the first. You're going to be, I don't know, the new Angry Birds. Normally, there is a reason why truly radical, innovative ideas haven't been done yet. Because probably the people who actually tried them are just lost in the woods crying right now. So this is really important because we have to think about that. Maybe we are 7 billion people in the planet. Somebody has ever thought about that, okay? So let's see if it's actually an awesome idea or is something that's going to put us down the drain. And I love this cat. I'm sorry. Go on. So what is risk? Risk is that beautiful space, beautiful in all its potential, between the safe zone on game development, all the things that you don't put risks in yourself, in your project by doing them, like using the team that you already use multiple times and you know the people, using the tools that all your programmers know. That's safe for us. And the potential disaster. And see that I use potential because you never are certain that disaster is going to occur. Sometimes the odds don't look good, but you are never sure. It's just potential. So the risk is that beautiful space over there where you have to navigate. And Sean Dugan says that risk is like jalapenos. The right amount gives life spice and too much brings tears. So we have to live in this beautiful space in game development where you have to find your balance in taking too many risks and not too much. Okay, because you have to think, and this is really important, that not taking a risk may actually hurt your project even more or the same way of taking it. Because sometimes you need to take risks to see where you can go. Okay. So it's not a bad thing, okay? I'm going to talk about risks like they are awful, but they're not a bad thing. We just need to go through them and see what works and what doesn't. So, how can we identify risks? Unfortunately, there's no surefire way that I can say, like, you can do this, this, and this, and this, and all the risks in your project are going to be in a beautiful Excel sheet. That's not going to happen, unfortunately. If there was, I would be doing it. If there was, everybody's going to be doing. But I'm going to try to show you some guidelines that I use and some other people use that maybe can help you along the way. So make assumptions. That seems easy enough. Be smart. Admit what you don't know. And defensive development model. So one by one, make assumptions. What if? Just make the most what ifs out of your project that you possibly can. It can be like pathetic stuff. Like, will my game ever be having plants going? I don't know. It doesn't really matter. It's your project. You are doing this yourself. No one else needs to see it. You are alone with your laptop, if you're a producer, because you need to have a laptop. And you're just writing constantly everything that might go wrong. What if my lead programmer leaves? That's a huge risk. What if we need to hire someone else? That's huge risk because we don't know if they're going to fit in the team. We don't know if they actually are as good as they say they are. So just say, what if, what if, what if, what if, what if, what if. It doesn't really matter if you just file 300 pages of what ifs. It's going to save you a lot of trouble in the project goes, because even if the most pathetic thing that you never thought about happens, you feel to yourself, oh, you know what? I thought about this before, so I kind of know what I can do. So, the next, be smart. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me, right? So, if something happens to you, it was awful, never repeat it again. Just be smart. This seems silly that I'm saying this. It's just common sense, really. And never be afraid of using the people that you have around you, because they have more experience than you sometimes, or they have different experiences from you. So they know different stuff. And this goes to the next one. Admit what you don't know. Who likes know-it-alls? No one likes know-it-alls. Oh, I know everything. I don't need to ask my team nothing, because I know everything that's going on. I know everything about programming, and I know everything about art, and I'm awesome, and I don't need them. That's potato. Don't do that. That's really bad. You just go by the team, because they are your team, and sometimes you're going to feel that they're your family, because you spend so much time working with them. Because I spend more time working with my team than actually with my brother. Sorry. It's true. So don't be afraid of admitting what you don't know, because we don't know everything, but the people next to you might. I can talk to myself. I have colleagues that are awesome. They're really intelligent people in their areas. And I feel that when I go by them and I see it and say, oh my gosh, I'm kind of concerned on this part or that part, they actually listen to me and they pinpoint on their side, on their perspective, what they think that might go wrong. And that's something that I would never get there myself, because I have other priorities and I have other kinds of expertise. So never, 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 never put that in the other part of your mind. So, and the last one, it's a little analogy of, you know, I'm pretty sure you heard of defensive driving, okay? So never take unnecessary risks. It's the same. You can drive really fast, but you can be careful driving fast. And when I say that be careful, you have to be watchful of the things that might happen before they actually happen. Like weird drivers when they're going out their lane, or just being watchful of obstacles that might appear. And it's exactly the same thing in game producement. You just have to go and think about what might go wrong. But you can go really fast, especially if the project is small, like Mousetrap that I showed before. It was a project of 8 weeks. In 8 weeks, if something goes wrong, you're pretty screwed. Sorry. It's not good. So what does happen? It happens that before I even entered that project, I really thought about everything that we needed to be doing. And I thought to myself, okay, I have eight weeks. If in the 6 weeks something goes wrong, it might delay the project a lot. And it's not something that it was my project or the company's project. We are doing for someone else. So it will not only hurt my team, it will hurt the perspective of our employers have on us. So very fast, but careful. So game dev risk areas. This is cool. We have content, technology, and organization. So, but please bear in mind that this is really high top view of the areas of game dev, okay? I could say, I don't know, 20 in any of it, but let's try to keep it simple so we can reduce what we're going to talk about and give importance. So all these areas have equal importance, and this is really important for us to understand. Content is not more important than technology, and organization is definitely not more important than content, and so on and so forth. They're all equally important, and you have to keep reminding yourself of that, because there's no part of your team that's more important than the other. And there's no part in your project development that's more important than the other. If one fails, you're doomed. So let's try not to keep any from failing. So we have content, organization, and technology. How many times have you seen those, you know, those images on the internet, and they have the triangle, say, you can only pick two, like the girl of your dreams. She can be smart, she can be hot, and she can be, I don't know the other one, but it doesn't matter, rich. So you can only pick two. I don't know, I saw those a million times, and while I was really thinking about game dev risks, that's what it came to mind to me, because it's really the same. To assure the biggest probability of success in your project, take risks in only two areas. Don't take more than two risks, because let's think a little bit about it. If you are going to risk everything in content, let's say a gameplay, a new gameplay model, make sure that you have a team behind you that you can trust. Make sure that that team actually knows what they're doing and you can trust them. So this is what I'm going to talk about from now on. It's going to be the big. So what can we call on content area risks? This is huge. I'm so sorry. It's a lot of things. If I get lost, just pull me back. So gameplay. Gameplay is one of the risk, one of the areas that might become a risk, right? So you can actually choose to make a puzzle game. That's pretty easy, right? Everybody has done a puzzle game before. But if you, and that's safe for me. If you come by me and say, okay, let's make a puzzle game, I don't twitch my eyes. I say, okay, that's a puzzle game, awesome. Awesome for you, awesome for us. But if you come to me and say, let's make an open world new MMO, I say, what? What are you talking about? Why do you want to do that? So it's not about what we should or should not do, but what's right for the company too in that time. But that's for later. So, and we have concept. Concept is really good. I always think that we should actually innovate in concept, but in the right direction. So why should we make another detectives game on a modern day city if we can make a game where our hobbits solving crimes in Middle Earth? Who wouldn't want the game of hobbits solving crimes in Middle Earth? I would play it. I don't know, I would play it. I wouldn't play like Murder to Souls, but I would play that one. But it's the same thing. If you want to do it, don't keep in mind that sometimes you have to actually look into the concept and see, will my players like this? Will they even like this? Like, does someone here like Lord of the Rings? Yeah? Will you like a game where hobbits are just riding little ponies in Middle Earth and solving crimes? Does it make sense in the lore? No. So what actually seemed like an awesome idea just turned into a really creepy idea. What the hell, I'm not going to play that game. So now it's different. And this is something that you need to do, like question yourself twice at least on everything. Question yourself twice, if not twice, just keep questioning yourself. So another risk on content is on art side. And this involves all kinds of beautiful art. We have the concept, we have the production, we have that really nasty that no artist wants to do with like model sheets and like characters. Oh my God, that's so boring. This needs to happen, otherwise we won't have something to look for in our game. So in art is when we start looking and actually seeing what our game is going to be like. If you don't press people enough to produce these sides, you'll never have the first feeling of what your game will be. And this is when you fall in love with your game. I don't know if this ever happened to you, that you guys have an idea in your head and you go by an artist and say, oh, you know, I had this idea, we have that idea. You think you can sketch something? And they just do something. It's like, oh my God, that's so much better than I ever thought about. And this is when you fall in love and you think, okay, we can actually make something out of this. So art is a place where we can actually risk. We can, there's so many types of art. We can do a pastel kind of stuff. We can do a really sci-fi. But we can't, there are some bases that we can't risk. Otherwise, neither your team will fall in love with the game. So, next. Design. game designers don't like when we say this, but they do have, they play a big part. Maybe this is real. Game designers are the people inside the project that know more about the project from one end to another. This is true. The seconds are producers because we know what's happening with the project and we know what's happening with the team, but they have that feeling of where the game is actually is going to go. But design makes a huge risk because sometimes they just get overexcited. They can't help it. I couldn't help myself. They just... more. What if we had a little bit more system? What if we had more coins? What if we had more? And this is the real risk on design because they just want more. They want their baby to be big and powerful and everything, and they have everything that all the other babies have. So did you have to pull them back slowly with love and care? I know you have such good ideas, but let's go back a little bit and see what our game really is. So prototype has two different types of risk. Because normally people don't prototype enough. It's true, because we have an idea, we have a deadline, and we need to get stuff doing. So what happens normally is that we prototype, and then we just use the code that was used for the prototype to just build the game on top of it. It's like, sometimes it works, thankfully, but sometimes it doesn't. And then you have the other spectrum of the prototype doing, is that people get so involved in the prototype and they really think, okay, this is not the game, this is just a thing that I'm going to do, that they take months prototyping stuff. And actually when you look into it, what do you see? A prototype, a half, not even half finished thing that might go somewhere in the game someday. And you just have a team of people, like 2-3 people, working on something that probably will never be used. So there's two types of risk on prototype. Testing. Testing is really important. I'm not saying that because I came from QA, but we'll go ahead. We'll go on this later because I have an example for you. So marketing. Marketing is so important. And it pains me to say this because I'm always butting heads with my boss. He's a marketeer, like the marketing dude. And I'm always butting heads with him. But it's so important. But don't tell him I say that. So what does marketing really do? For us, it prevents us from doing the wrong game. Sometimes we are so in love with that idea that's like, oh no, it's gonna hurt, it's gonna work because I love it. I love it so much, why wouldn't it ever work? But sometimes our audience just doesn't want this. It's not the right time, it's not the right gameplay, it's not the right art, it's not the right platform. So if you don't let marketing do their before, like pre-job, you'll never know if you are spending your resources in something that will never come to be. So there's something really useful that actually I'm going to do for this next game that we are going to do, is that it's pretty simple. You think of a game, you have your game, right? And if you have a game, you have an audience. This is ground rules. Everybody knows that. If you have a game, you have a buyer, not just an audience. You have someone that's going to buy your game. You have someone that's going to play it and going to love it. Who is that someone? Really think about it. It's going to be you? It's going to be me? Like, think about the generic game. I'm SingStar. Who is the generic player of SingStar? I don't know, maybe a woman, a young adult. She likes to party. She likes to have fun with her friends, right? So let's really think about her. And more than think about it, let's ask one of our artists to draw a sketch of her. Why not? Draw a sketch of that young girl that likes to party and sing and karaoke with her friends. And then after sketching it, make a life-size cardboard cutout of her. Like a big one. Doesn't matter, a really big one. And put it next to your team, the team that is developing the game. And every time someone comes, pops along with an idea, what if we did this in the game? You can look into that girl, the girl that's gonna buy her SingStar. Will she even notice that feature? Will she care if we actually did this? If we actually all come to the conclusion that she wouldn't give a flying to it. We just don't do it, right? And this is important for two things. The first, of course, is to keep our clients happy. The second is to remind us that we are ultimately not doing the game for ourselves. We are doing the game for someone else. And this is really important because if we don't do that, we keep falling in the same pit. It's like, oh, I really love this feature. Let's not take it out. But if that girl doesn't care? Why should we do it? Why should I spend time on my programmers? Why should artists should be sketching this when they could actually be making stuff that's going to be used and it's going to be noted and it's going to be loved by our client? So marketing is important. There's a lot more stuff that you can do on marketing, but okay. So IP. Why is IP a risk? What would you choose? Would you choose to make a game on an IP that's really well known, let's say Cristiano Ronaldo, or let's make an IP on, Markovic? What would you choose? Like if you had to choose instantly. Of course you're going to go for Cristiano Ronaldo. Let's see the freaking fan base that the guy has. Only for the name, he's going to have a lot of downloads, right? So, but sometimes it's not just looking at the IP and what's going to bring customers in. It's going to look, how many games of Cristiano Ronaldo already has? Will our game be lost in it or not? Probably it will. It's going to be one more. Maybe you're going to do a kick-ass game of Markovic. It's going to be amazing. Who knows? So it's always there's always two sides of each coin. We have a franchise. Let's say you make an awesome game. Everybody loves that game. I love that game. So now let's make a new game. Are you going to make a new game or are you going to make awesome game number two? In an ideal world, let's say we're all awesome indies working because we love this. Let's make a new game because I love the experience of making that one. I'm pretty sure I can make an awesome second game without being connected to the other one. But in the real world, okay, this one worked. This one is our ground base. Should we not make a second one? Or maybe some pretty DLCs? And this is a sniff for me because I don't like DLCs. But this is what happens. And DLC is not just for this. Imagine that you are actually planning the game and you're going to think ahead. You know what? I want my game to be successful. And more than that, I want my game to make money for my company, for my team. And I want so many people to play it. So what should I do? Should I give the whole game already as it launches? Or should I withhold some features and just give them as DLCs later? Well, if people love it, people will buy it. So what will you do? This is another risk. This is the difficult part, is that there's always two sides of each coin, and you have to choose which one to actually take care of. Sorry, this is kind of distracting.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. So let's go back to the testing. And I wanted to give an example, and I wanted to give a real example to actually something that happened to BioDroid. We're not perfect. No one is perfect. So this is something that happened with the beautiful Mega Hamster game. Whoever played this? No, everyone here. Yay, me. So Mega Hamster game, it's a skate game and BMX. Sorry, it has BMX as well. That was done before I went to BioDroid. So I got in BioDroid like a year and a half ago. So when I got there and went to QA, I sat down and said, what am I going to do? And they brought the iPads, those big white things yet. And they put Mega Ramp. Like, okay, I'm going to test Mega Ramp. Okay, awesome. And the first day, I left BioDroid with 164 bugs. 164 bugs. And that was a launched game. I was like, there's something wrong here. I was thinking to myself, oh, no. Okay, I know I'm a noob in this. I know I don't know much about this. But 164 bugs, there's something wrong. Until I started actually pulling for the programmers. But why are so many bugs? The game is launched. Oh, you know, it's because we didn't have time to test it. And I was like, oh, that makes sense. It's not tested at all. Doesn't mean that people don't love it now. Doesn't mean that it's not actually being a success. But it was launched without even being tested. And I thought, this doesn't make sense. So right now, every time I actually start planning a project, I always put enough time for testing, overtime if needs. Because it's so important. And the amount of negative reviews that we have because the game was not tested, it's absurd because there was no need to do it. But, you know, the circumstances sometimes boss us around. So we have to do what we're told and we have to do what the company needs. But if we can avoid it, we will. And this is one of the examples that will never leave my whole life because I found 164 bugs in the first time I tried the game. So now, next one, technology. Yes, engines. Engines are such a pain in the butt. Yes, they are. You have to choose are you gonna choose the new one, the one with the awesome specs, the one you're gonna make like water and particles all over it, because the video presentation is so cool. Are you gonna use it? But do your programmers know how to actually use it? Do they need time to learn? Do you have time in your project for them to learn it? So are you gonna stick with the old one that you used for like 2 years, but you know you can make something out of it? What are you gonna do? That's a good question. That's a question that you have to actually look into your game and see, you know what, I think I can take 2 months and let them just scrabble around the engine, see, okay, can you work with it or not? And that's why we have test times, thank God, so they can do that. So, platforms. There are many platforms, like Windows Phone, and Android, and iOS, and Wii, and PlayStation 3, and PlayStation 4, and Xbox One, and Xbox 360, and Nintendo DS, and Nintendo blah, 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 blah. I can go around you. And Kindle. I really like Kindle, by the way. So, what are you going to choose? Most people just like, okay, there are some platforms that are really easy to develop for, you know? Mobile games are easy to do if you follow some rules. Wii is easy to develop for. But is that right for your game? Is your audience in that market, in that platform? Would you make like a Professor Lepton game in PlayStation 4? I wouldn't. I wouldn't play that. I like to read on my DS. It's really cool. I can use the pen and everything. I wouldn't use it on my PlayStation 4. It's the same. Would you play FIFA on Nintendo DS? I wouldn't. So it's not just about thinking of it's easy or it's not easy. It's also thinking about what makes sense. And this comes along the common sense again. And sometimes it just don't even, we just forget about common sense. So, tools. This is a big argument over in BioDroid. We're always butting heads with the programmers on tools. They like their tools. They like making their own stuff. They're like, okay, you know what? I'm going to use this in this game, but I did it. I have total control over it, and nothing will ever go wrong because I did it, and I'm a god. Those are programmers. It's true. There's no programmer here. So, yeah. But should you actually allow them? Should you let them use a tool that's not tested, that's not proven that works in your big-ass game, that's going to take a lot of time, and that's going to take a lot of resources, and it's going to take a lot of money and a lot of people? Will you let them do that? You know what? I'm always for the thing that leaves people more comfortable. And if they're more comfortable doing that, we think twice on it. But at the same time, will it hurt your project? Will it hurt the other parts of your project? Will it hurt the other team members that don't have a clue on how to actually use their tools? So always two sides of a coin. Servers. Servers are so boring. Servers just can make or break your game. You have to be really careful. Oh, everybody knows that. Right now we have a beautiful thing called... Actually, John Griffin is talking right now. And he made it seem easy to use. He made it seem like this is an accessible thing for all of us to understand. And that's a pretty cool thing, because the servers, we look into it and we just crunch our noses, because that's a big risk in your game. You have to have someone in your team that actually understands of networks, but understands it like nobody business, so you can actually feel safe. And GameSparks actually help a lot on this part. So multiplayer, not only doing it, but thinking, does it make sense in my game? Because right now, the only thing you hear, or, well, me too, is like, social, and it's true. Social will make or break your game. If you don't have social, your game is dead. Who heard that before? I heard that like a bazillion times. But if my game is a single player experience I don't want to share with anyone, and I want to make my own, why the hell am I going to put multiplayer in it? Because all the other people are doing it? But this has two sides. Sometimes you are so connected and so inside this idea of, I don't want multiplayer on my game, that sometimes we miss opportunities that if we actually put some Facebook on it and let people challenge each other, maybe they will even enjoy more our game. So this, like all risks, this comes for in unique ways for each problem and for each project. So, plugins. Plugins are awful. I'm going to go, that's another example. middleware. First thing for middleware. Never, ever, ever trust any kind of marketing on middleware. This is the most amazing software. We'll never have to program a line of code again. You just can move around stuff and the game will be made. That's so not true. That's such a lie. Don't trust them. What you need to do is test it. And you don't even have, you can't even test it in a clean slate, because that middleware, that awesome software, will have to run as smoothly without no game running through it, as it will in a few months ago when you have a lot of code, a lot of art, a lot of everything in it, and it needs to run as smoothly. So you know what? Not even testing it is enough. It's a big risk, and the only advice I can give you is just ask other people that use it. Did it work for you? Don't trust the marketeers on this. Just don't trust the marketeers, because this is really a difficult spot. So, Moisture Series. This is my example for technology area risks on the plugins. We were making a really cool surf game. We liked our surf game. Our surf game was cool. We could play it. It was 3 weeks before the deadline. It's like, okay, this is a tight surf game. We're doing fine. And then suddenly we heard, oh, wait. But the plugins, oh, that's true. So let's just put Facebook, okay. Let's put Google Game Services, okay. Let's put Twitter, okay. Let's put leaderboards. Something more? Let's put. Okay, so let's just put them. And the programmer, the poor guy, just spent the whole week just plugins. And we couldn't even see the game. And then so he's like, oh, you know what? I'm done. I'm really good. Like all programmers, I'm really good. I did it. You never believe in me, but I did it. And he grabs the game in the phone. I remember that moment exactly. And he gave it to me, and he was so happy. Oh my God, I made this work. And I was like, oh yes, I'm so excited. And I open it. Yeah, it's working. And the thing showed up saying, welcome back, Christiana. You know, the thing from Google. Yes, yes, okay. So Facebook, crash, instantly. The game never opened again. That was it. That build was it. So we spent the 2 next weeks just trying to make the freaking plugins work. There's no easy way of avoiding it. You're gonna need to use it. If you want to have your game actually seen on Google, it has to have the plugins for Google. And they just now invented new ones, the quests and the events and the different leaderboards for each event and the different leaderboards for each quest. So you're gonna have to use it. Ask, investigate, search. Sometimes there are some plugins that have other ways of doing it, and people that are really just looking into these programmers, that's the only thing they do is just look at plugins and try to make all of them work in the same game, because that's the problem. The problem is not for you to make a Game Center work on iOS. That's pretty easy, just a line of code. But if you want to make Game Center work with Facebook, well, that's different. Does the SDK do that? And now let's go on a newer platform. Let's say, for example, Kindle Amazon, the Kindle Fire, okay? So you put your game in Kindle, which is pretty easy. You just have an Android. There's like this. Yes, it's so easy for you to put your game in Amazon. Just go on Android, remove the plugins of all the other guys, and just, it's an APK. Everybody can do it. Yeah, okay, we're going to do this. This is simple. It's going to take no time at all. So what Facebook plugin works with Amazon? None. So you made your game to work with Facebook, and now your game doesn't work with Facebook because you can't put Facebook, otherwise you can't have your game on Kindle Amazon. But they say, worry not, we have Game Circle, another plugin. That's not going to work with what? All the others that you have to put there. So this is an endless circle of pain in the ass. This was our example on BioDroid for Moisture Series. Okay, organization. And this is my favorite part. I really like working with my team. I really enjoy them. I really like pushing for them and sometimes being mean and telling us, you know what, you're not doing the best thing you can. And they get really angry with me. Why am I not doing the best thing I can? And you know what, the next day they get a little bit iffy, but then they go, oh, okay, maybe you were right. Maybe I can do this. But only because you asked. And the team is really, it's a really nice risk to have, I think. Of all the risks, it's the best risk to have because it's just working with people every day. And if it wasn't working with people, it wasn't fun at all. So next, scheduling project management. So there's no right or wrong way to schedule a project. There's no answer for that. Use this software or use that. No. Because what? The risk in this is not which software to use. It's not using one at all. If you don't schedule a project, that's going to go wrong for you. That's going to go bad for your team. You won't have a roadmap to follow. You don't know where your project is going to lead. You simply have no idea what's going to go on because, what, you didn't schedule your project. That's why producers are so important and project managers are so important. Because even if no one else in the freaking project cares, we know that there's a deadline coming in 2 weeks and we have to start poking people. You know what? You need to do this. Or they're like, oh, but I'm really working on this cool feature. Yeah, but you know, if you don't do this deadline, the art guys can make their deadline, you know? So why do I have your codes if I don't have their art? So sucks, but we have to work as a team. So there are a lot of methodologies on project management. We have the waterfall, the agile, the scrums. Most of us, we tend to use some sort of hybrid stuff that we just connect and work with our team. It's amazing, just do it. I like Trello. Anyone heard of Trello? Except for you guys, yeah. These guys are just fascinated against Trello. But Trello is really easy to use. It's amazing. Everybody can keep track of it. I have it on my smartphone, on my two smartphones, and keep getting notifications. You know what? Francisco just did an amazing 3D asset, and he put it on Trello. And I'm at home because he was working late. Hey, Francisco is working. So cool. So it usually happens. So there really is no right thing to do, but there's the only wrong thing to do is not do nothing at all. So there's an idea that I can give you, or kind of a tip, to reduce the risk in scheduling, because scheduling is really important. Even if you have a big team, like I now have a huge team, never had this size of a team before, you have leads, and every lead has a department, okay? So I have the producer, I talk with the team leads, the team leads talk with their teams. Awesome. Of course, we still talk among each other, it doesn't matter. But there's an idea it's simple to do when you're the producer, just that will avoid some risks on scheduling. Just don't book your leads 100%. Give them time to schedule their teams. Because if you expect your leaders to work, to be as productive as someone who doesn't have to guide over a team, they're just going to burn down so fast. And it's going to be half of the project, and they're telling me, I need vacations. I can't do this. I can't sleep. I'm always thinking about this. So why are you going to put the leaders through this? And the leaders are some people that need to always be positive and embracing new challenges because the team are looking for them. They are the pillar of stuff. So there's a really big, really small thing to do when you're scheduling your projects. So don't overbook your leads. Leave them time to actually look over the people that they need to. So, next. Outsourcing. Everybody heard of, you can't make that art, I'm just going to ask some Chinese people. Right? They're easy, they're fast, they're so cheap. Why not? Or some Thailandian people, I don't know. It's so easy, why not? Why don't we just fire all our artists and do that? That makes total sense. Right? No, it doesn't. Let's imagine that you actually book a team on China. Let's say China. So that team works from this day, X day, to this X day. And imagine that something goes awfully wrong on the next day that they are booked in programming and that they can't implement their art. Sucks for you. They are not employed anymore. You'd have to make another contract. It's going to take some time. You have to make another ask. Another communication. And all the communication flaws that you might have with them. And the time frames. Time frames are completely different. They're sleeping and I'm awake. That means that they only read my complaints or my appraises one day after I actually made them. So this puts the whole project behind. But this is not saying that it doesn't have its resources and its advantages. It's fast. Yes, it is. Normally, it's good if you find a team that actually has proven that they are good. Okay. But you really have to think about it. So business. In business, I'm going to leave for later because I have the... Oh, yeah, it's already. Awesome. So Decathlon. Decathlon was our biggest game yet. It was amazing to do. It was a pain in the ass to do. The Activision is just, it's really hard to work with, but we learned a lot from them. But Decathlon was so hard to do. I don't think anyone on the team was actually mentally ready to do this kind of a project, but we did it and it's amazing and you should play it if you didn't yet. It's the star of our company. And there's a big risk on business. If you're small indie teams, you probably have like what, 2, 3, 4, 5 people, okay, normal, and you have one project, one game, one publisher, if you have a publisher. If you have a publisher, your life is made a little bit easy, right? Because you have that safe spot over there. Someone that's gonna hold your hand if you start falling. Imagine that you have all three and you're pretty good, okay. I have my team, we're working on this project, it's going okay, awesome. And then suddenly the publisher says, you know what, it's the audience doesn't want this, let's cancel the project. That's it for you. It takes a lot of time to find a new project. It takes a lot of time to find a new publisher. It takes a lot of time to make a contract with the publisher if you find it. It takes a lot of time to everything. So the chances are that in the meantime, while you are waiting for the other publisher, other project, other everything that might come along, you'll run out of money. You will run out of patience. You'll run out of actually, because it'll just fall apart. It's normal. So there's something that you can do. You can diversify your income. What does that mean? While you actually have a publisher, while you actually have a project, just don't stay there. Let's just see what else the world has to offer. Let's just say that some guy in Thailand is looking for someone to publish their games, or they want a really small game that you can do if you hire one more person. Why not? And that's two ways. That's a way of diversifying your income. And if something falls apart, your main plan falls apart, you actually have a backup, even if it's small, but you have a plan that might give you time and a little bit of support while you look for something else to continue your company. This is really important. I don't think many of us have this idea that making games is so fun, but it's a business. It is a business. And we try not to think about it that way because we really like playing games. And I'm a gamer. I love games and I love playing games and I love making games. But sometimes I have to pull myself back and think, okay, but there's a team and the team needs a lot of stuff and our company needs products. So sometimes we have to be cold about this and think, okay, I have this publisher and we are really cool with them. They like us, we like them, but things might fall apart and then all their project will fall apart. So on Decathlon it was not this, it was the consequence of finding another project. We had three projects running at the same time on Decathlon. We had three projects. But Decathlon was the start of the family. So everyone was looking intensely at Decathlon. Everybody was working on Decathlon. And in the end, when he actually removed their hands from the sand and looked at the other guys, what was happening? The other projects were just, they were running on fumes, which is normal because everyone was working on Decathlon. Who was working on that? Who is looking into that project? So, okay, diversify your income, but never, ever think that you can make two games at the same time if you can't make two games at the same time. You'll both suffer. Okay, so this is just the turnaround. More risks you take, bigger is the chance of running into catastrophic ruin. And this is a scared kitty because I'm being really pessimistic right now and I think we needed a laugh. I really like kitties. This is the last thing. This is really, really fast. Reducing risks. There's no surefire way of reducing risks. There's no surefire ways of managing risks. Unfortunately, if there is, someone please tell me. So use your head. Use common sense. Don't think you're so confident that you're not going to even look before you leap. Okay, you might have done that project 100 times before. Don't do that. Don't be overconfident because there's something that might go wrong. So use a schedule. Of course, use a schedule. Use a feature list. It's really important. If you map all the important features of your game, you have always, in the run of the project, you always know what you have to do. If there's something that you have to cut, you're never going to cut that feature because it's the most important feature of the game. Create a next statement. Who knows what the next statement is? Next statements are awesome. It's like the elevator pitch. So if I say to you, the People Simulator, which game is it? So you know what a next statement is. Next statement is just a sentence that's going to resume your game to its essence in such a way that you already know what the game is. And you never diverge from that because you always know what your game is. Sims game, it's a people simulator. Doesn't matter how far it goes, how many expansions it has, how many DLCs it has. It's a people simulator. Next. Use past experience. Don't be a potato. if something goes wrong with someone on your team, just look into it, say, okay, that go wrong, that might go wrong again. Read postmortems. This is awesome. We should all do this. Because if you're looking to make a game that's already been done before, just go look into postmortems. What did go wrong for that team? What can go wrong for my team? Because we're making the same kind of game. Chances are we're going to run into the same obstacles. So, and this is the best part on reducing risk, is continually communicate with your entire team. Don't alienate anyone. Just let everyone know what it's happening. Let everyone know what the problem is. And work together trying to solve everything. Because many heads you have, more better you're going to think, and more risks you're going to cover. User gut instinct. If you're a producer, that's for something. That's just because you like Excel. That's because you have something in yourself that has a different sensibility of what you can and what you cannot take out of a game. So user gut instinct. And never, ever, ever, ever hide the problems. Because if you hide the problems, they'll just become a bigger problem because you didn't tell the team. And if you didn't tell the team, that means it's huge and people can't know because they will panic. And I have another cat. Yes, it's a panicked cat. And that's how we get when we are so panicked that we can't do anything else. So it's super important to be honest. Just be honest with your team. If you involve the team, they will get emotionally involved in the team because in the game because it will be their baby, not just your baby. It will be everyone's baby. And if you have a baby, you're going to invest everything that you can in it, right? Because it's your baby. If you invest more, they will try harder. And if they try harder, you're just involving the team again. It's a beautiful, vicious cycle that I really love. So that was it. Thank you so much. Thank you, Shane. that's my email if you have any questions or something. So please enjoy the rest of the game of the day. It's gonna be an awesome game. The rest of the day. It's gonna be an awesome day. We're gonna learn a lot. I'm really excited for some of the talks. So if you have something that you need to talk to me, I'll just be around, okay? So thank you so much for the attention.